The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes, the families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Department of Homeland Security's Disinformation Governance Board has been put on ice by the Biden administration and its head, Nina Jankowicz, Soviet Mary Poppins. She's resigned. The news comes just 3 weeks after the board was announced and follows the emergence of numerous posts and videos in which Jankowicz repeated left-wing talking points on Hunter Biden's laptop and other controversial issues where she was wrong. We'll take a look at the sudden demise of America's Ministry of Truth in tonight's. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. The Ministry of Truth under the Biden regime is kaput. It is done. It is finished. It is over with. They're saying on pause, but I think we all know this is not going to be an idea they're likely to resurrect anytime soon. This was absurd from the get-go. There are already, just so everyone knows at home, all kinds of government entities that do open source research into foreign press and information that's circulating on the internet. A disinformation board that is within the Department of Homeland Security, meaning preventing Americans from thinking that they're getting information that's true, that's really not. That put everybody right away on edge, and especially when we found out who was behind it, a left-wing stooge who has a long history of the most absurd partisanship imaginable in public life. But there you go. Soviet Mary Poppins, Nina Jankowicz. The disinformation board is not going to be her little fiefdom within the federal government anymore. That's all over with. Now, they're trying to, in some way, make it seem like this is a bad thing and that it's the result of nefarious forces on the right who somehow managed to end what would have otherwise been such an important government entity. The Washington Post, and this was a Taylor Lorenz story, the one who cries when people are mean to her online when she's trying to dox and ruin people's lives professionally all the time. The Biden administration let right-wing attacks derail its disinformation efforts. Yeah, let right-wing attacks, as in people figured out who this was, who was going to run the board, and looked at her public statements and looked at things like her saying the Hunter Biden laptop was disinformation, that was itself, as we know, disinformation meant to help throw the election to Joe Biden and may have even been the difference maker. Who knows? We can never run that experiment again to find out. This is from that Washington Post story. Just 3 weeks after its announcement, the Disinformation Governance Board is being paused. On Monday, DHS decided to shut down the board, according to multiple people with knowledge of the situation. By Tuesday morning, Jankowicz had drafted a resignation letter in response to the board's dissolution. So this thing lasted just a little bit longer than CNN Plus. Obviously not exactly a huge success story from within the federal government. But it goes to the broader point about the mentality here. And the mentality of the Democrats who push these ideas is that not only should there be social media companies and other corporations engaged in blatantly partisan censorship, but well beyond that, obviously, there should be government censorship and government rooting out ideas that bothers the left and the Democrats under the guise of it being about public health or safety or just preventing that disinformation from seeping into the public's mind. This is really the definition of Orwellian. This kind of action is exactly what George Orwell in 1984 was warning people about. And now, of course, that the left has been dealt this minor setback in their efforts to be able to decide what is acceptable to be said and what is not, they're making this about how Jankowicz, because she's a woman, of course, is a victim. This is from the Washington Post story, the Taylor Lorenz special here. Within hours of her appointment, Jankowicz was thrust in the spotlight by the very forces she dedicated her career to combating. She's been subject to an unrelenting barrage of harassment and abuse, while unchecked misrepresentations of her work continue to go viral. Unchecked misrepresentations. Think about what they consider to be disinformation. Think about some of the things that misrepresentations of her work. You mean opinions about how she's kind of a loon who was wrong and always wrong in favor of Democrats. She's a partisan activist, effectively. How is that a misrepresentation? Well, since Ms. Lorenz wants to say that Soviet Mary Poppins over here is somehow misrepresented by the right, they tried so hard to say, oh, she's such an expert, widely respected expert in her field. By whom? I haven't even heard of this person before. And what, the disinformation policing field? Yeah, it's called being able to read, okay? We can all police disinformation on our own, thank you very much. But since they're claiming that there is a lack of context and that that's what led to Soviet Mary Poppins having to resign from the disinformation board, let's go back and look at some of the things that this person who is going to be in a role backed up by the Department of Homeland Security to decipher and determine for us what is disinformation, what is not. Here she is talking about how it's not conservatives who are being silenced on social media. Watch.
There's already this idea, this allegation that there is anti-conservative bias on the platforms, even though there has been study after study proving, in fact, that often it's liberal voices that are being silenced, particularly minority voices on social media. So I think we're going to see more allegations of that.
Yeah, it's the libs on Twitter who are being silenced and Facebook, sure, and YouTube. You have to wonder how she never used those platforms. Is she just a very practiced liar and so can look at people, look at a camera in this case, and say something that's so obviously false? Or is she just honestly really stupid? It's tough to know which category she would actually fall into. I think you can make a case it's a combination of these things. But clearly to have somebody who would go out there and say the laughably false nonsense about how it's liberal voices being silenced on social media when we know the open policies now, thanks to Elon Musk's effort to buy Twitter, for a long time have been, if you divert from the Democrat consensus, they will shut you down on these platforms. Here she is saying that CRT, for example, another area of a real partisan concern for Democrats.
Critical race theory has become one of those hot button issues that the Republicans and other, you know, disinformers who are engaged in disinformation for profit, frankly, there are plenty of, you know, media outlets that are making money off of this too, have seized on. And I live in Virginia, and in Loudoun County, that's one of the areas where people have really honed in on this topic.
So really what they've done is they've rebranded this term disinformation to give a pseudo-scientific sense, if you will, to efforts to suppress opinions they don't like. An opinion they disagree with becomes disinformation. Or a statement that is generally true, but they can find some instance in which it could be not true or not true 100% of the time, they will say it's disinformation. So if I say CRT is being taught in schools, which it is, they'll say, no, that's disinformation. Look at this school. They're not teaching CRT. Yeah, but there are lots of schools where they are all over the country, and that's the point. But you see, they don't want to actually have the debate out in the open. They don't want to actually have a discussion. They want to control what you can say. And then, perhaps most obvious in the whole disinformation realm here from Soviet Mary Poppins, she tweeted back in 2020, on the laptop from hell, apparently, Biden notes that 50 former NatSec officials and 5 former CIA heads believe the laptop is a Russian influence operation. Trump says Russia, Russia, Russia. Friends, those national security officials have been forever, they now go down in infamy for being morons or stooges for the Democrat Party, lighting their credibility on fire right before an election to try to help Joe Biden win. So we could have this amazing presidency we're all seeing now with a horrible economy, skyrocketing prices, really high price of gas, high inflation, global instability in a really meaningful way, nuclear power at major war in Ukraine. I mean, there's a lot of big problems. They did all this, they lied, they destroyed their credibility so we could have this imbecile Joe Biden running the country. These are the people who think they're so smart, they should police your speech. Pretty amazing to think about it. We'll have more on the rise and fall of DHS's Disinformation Governance Board with Deputy Editor of Real Clear Investigations, Ben Weingarten, coming up. First, let's talk about protecting your home. If you own a home or property, there's 2 reasons you never want to become a victim of home title fraud. Number one, when a cyber criminal worms his way under your home's title, he'll take out a loan using your home's equity. Then he'll vanish, leaving you to prove you didn't commit fraud. Number two, you could be a victim of home title fraud and not know it for months. No agency notifies you or asks you if you sold your home or added someone else to the title. You'll find out when the collection calls start for those loans you never took out. Nobody knows more about how to help stop this crime than Home Title Lock, America's trusted leader. Here's what I urge you to do. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and read the testimonials from retired FBI agents and others, then register your address to see if you're already a victim. When you protect your home, tell them Buck Sexton sent you for 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com, that's HomeTitleLock.com. We'll be right back with more. Hold the line.
Support for my podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools. Manscaped's performance package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with its exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code BUCK at manscaped.com. The performance package 4.0 includes a ton of men's grooming products like the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a bunch of other great men's hygiene products you never knew you needed, plus a travel bag to hold it all. The Lawnmower trimmer is the best. It's got a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, and it's waterproof, so no more messes on the bathroom floor. You'll also get the waterproof Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer with proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in all those delicate areas. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BUCK at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code BUCK to unlock your confidence and always use the right tools with Manscaped.
We set up essentially an internal working group, and I must say that we could have done a better job in communicating what it is and what it isn't. It's a working group that takes best practices with respect to our work that has been going on for years, mm-hmm. best practices on how to do that work, the work of addressing disinformation that presents a threat to the security of our country, how to do that work in a way that does not infringe on free speech.
That was DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas attempting to explain what exactly the department's Disinformation Governance Board was supposed to do. Apparently, his bizarre word salad answer didn't clarify anything because now, less than 3 weeks later, the group has been disbanded. The media has rallied around the now former head of the board, with Washington Post writer Taylor Lorenz claiming that Nina Jankowicz was, quote, a victim of coordinated online attacks. Sounds like a conspiracy theory to me. Let's talk about it. Joining me, Deputy Editor of Real Clear Investigations, Ben Weingarten. Hey, Ben, how you doing?
I'm well. How about you, Buck?
I mean, I'm obviously going to have to, you know, pour out some Chardonnay in the grass tonight because I'm so sad about the disinformation board, all the tears welling up. What do you think?
Well, it was just all the pouncing and seizing by conservatives who engaged in a coordinated disinformation campaign to take out the DGB. And of course, the irony that it was Taylor Lorenz talking about, you know, essentially, I guess, the cyberbullying here that took out the DGB is just beyond parody and ironic in so many different ways. Look, obviously, I think it's a good development that they ended this DGB. But as I've been arguing in print and in speech, since it was first announced and the controversy began around it, even if the DGB is taken out, it has to be seen in its broader context as just one organ of a much broader war on wrongthink. And that war on wrongthink started with the creation of a national strategy for countering domestic terrorism, first of its kind, which talked about in June of last year when it was published, confronting long-term contributors to domestic terrorism, including misinformation and disinformation that led ultimately to the DHS to put out a threat bulletin in February of this year, talking about the fact that we face a heightened threat environment due to mis, dis, and malinformation. Of course, that is information the regime doesn't like on matters like the coronavirus or election integrity or immigration. Then you had the advent of the DGB. But even if the DGB is gone and they say it's paused and self-proclaimed disinformation, Mary Poppins, Nina Jankowicz is out, the whole edifice has to be torn out, root and branch. And I hope lawmakers and activists see this for what it is. A victory in one battle, but there's a much larger war that's going on. And it's against a free thinking, free speaking, free acting American people.
I wanted to give you a chance to react to the White House press secretary, the new White House press secretary. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre, who seems to be saying the board, the misinformation or disinformation board, was shut down because of all the disinformation out there. Watch.
To continue.
So if it's pausing because you think the board was mischaracterized, then the disinformation board is being shut down because of disinformation? Is that what's happening here?
Look, I mean, the board was put forth for a purpose, right? To make sure that we really did really did address what was happening across the country when it came to disinformation.
And it's okay to wait now, 75 days.
It's going to pause. There's been a mischaracterizations from outside forces. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to pause it and we're going to do an assessment. But the work doesn't stop. We're still going to continue the work. The DHS is still going to continue the work.
Okay. What do you make of that?
Well, that last line, I think, is the most telling line. The work doesn't stop. I mean, they've said that wrongthinkers pose the premier threat to the homeland. And when she says work doesn't stop, that is probably the most genuine part of that entire word salad of a statement. She didn't have to look at her notes for that one, though. So I do give her credit for that because I think she's passionate about this issue and the administration is. The notion that this was just a failure of messaging, when you're trying to explain a failure of messaging, you know that you've lost, and they've lost on the merits. They've lost because even if this really was focused on true disinformation, and obviously it wouldn't have been because the person running this was a great spewer of untruth when it came to Russiagate writ large. She touted Christopher Steele's work. She's someone who said that the Hunter Biden laptop story was Russian disinformation, which was, of course, the greatest American information operation going into the 2020 election of all. She was the last arbiter of truth, but we shouldn't have arbiters of truth in government, period, full stop. And that's the real issue here, is that these are not the people who ought to be determining fact from fiction and telling us that it's dangerous to hear ideas they don't like. A free-thinking people ought to be able to decide for ourselves, weigh the merits, look at things reasonably, and come to our own response. When the regime goes out there and tries to tell us what's truth and what's fiction, it undermines itself, ironically.
What was the real purpose of it? I mean, what do you think they thought when they set this up under the Biden DHS, the DGB, as you've been calling it, which, you know, I got to say, we give it an acronym, it almost feels like it's real, but maybe it will be real at some point. What do you think they thought they were going to do with this thing?
Well, look at their words and look at their actions. So when the DHS, after the controversy started over this, they put out this sort of fact sheet which said this was going to be focused on irregular migration, that is mass illegal immigration into the country. And they said they were focused on disinformation from cartels, for example, spewing disinformation about our border policies. Okay, well, have to question, it would have been nice to have examples of that, because are they saying that if you talk about the fact we have open borders, that's dangerous disinformation? I think that might prove to be truth or closer to truth than fiction. And then also Russian disinformation going into the midterm elections. That's a pretty broad brush, Russian disinformation. This coming again from a bureau that was going to be headed by someone who said Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation and who said that Russiagate was real, essentially, and continued to tout that till the bitter end. Then the fact that the DHS said this was not going to be operational, yet it was going to coordinate not only across the DHS, but across other federal agencies as well. In effect, that makes it operational because the DHS has operational components that it was going to be coordinating with, as do the other agencies that presumably it would have worked across. But this work, as the new press secretary herself has indicated, not only persists, but it happened before. I mean, go back to last year, you'll recall, and I'm sure your viewers will recall, when Jen Psaki was talking about the fact that the administration was flagging disinformation for Facebook and other social media companies. And she said that those who spew dangerous disinformation on these platforms, if one platform deplatforms you, all the platforms should deplatform you. They've been the most ardent attackers of purported disinformation. But then, of course, particularly when it comes to coronavirus, what they've put out as truth, they've gone back on, and the disinformation they used to censor becomes the regime's official narrative. So once again, these are the last people who should be involved with this. They have leaned on big tech companies to pursue wrong thinkers. And that's a dangerous place to be in America, because then you get into First Amendment violations by proxy. And I think we've seen that in spades from this administration. That's where it goes from theoretical to operational in the real world. And even worse than just government tyranny, private sector tyranny on behalf of the government.
Do you ever think that this administration maybe had a couple of people who actually read Orwell's 1984 and were like, it's a cool idea?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote in the New York Post a week ago, if you were trying to undermine your legitimacy and discredit yourself, what would you do but set up a ministry of truth inside your domestic security apparatus and then put this person, Nina Jankowicz, in charge of it? I mean, it would almost be the greatest false flag operation of all time if it was actually secretly conservatives within the administration plotting to create this. But unfortunately, we're not living in fiction. We're living in a real world. And I actually think they believe there's wisdom in this, because they equate views that are dangerous to their agenda with dangers to our democracy. And when they say our democracy, what they mean is their power, their privilege, their authority. But yeah, Orwell provides a pretty good playbook for them. Disaster for the country, but it's good at least that Americans are being exposed to the true tyranny at the end of the day, where the progressive agenda ultimately leads.
Ben, always astute, sir. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
A big night for former President Donald Trump as the majority of the candidates he endorsed cruise to victory in state primaries. We'll take a look at the results of the big races with CEO of American Majority, Ned Ryan. We come back. First, let's talk about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed. We know that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communication will be hosted on data centers in Switzerland. So big tech spying, not an issue. Privacy is a big concern right now. You want to make sure you actually stop the constant theft of your digital identity, you need Secure. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com. And use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more. Hold the line. Looks like former President Trump still has long coattails, as 23 of the 27 candidates he backed going to last night's primaries won their races. But it's still not over in the state of Pennsylvania, where a key race that could shape the future of the Senate is still undecided. Trump-backed celebrity doctor Mehmet Oz holds a razor-thin advantage over former finance executive David McCormick as the vote count continued into today. Here was Dr. Oz to his supporters last night.
When all the votes are tallied, I am confident we will win. We are making a ferocious charge, but when is this close, what else would you expect? Everything about this campaign has been tight.
Joining me now with Reaction America Majority CEO, Ned Ryan, our friend. Ned, good to see you, buddy.
Good to be with you, Buck.
So was this pretty much exactly what you expected? What are your top takeaways from this last night, man? What do you see?
Boy, it was a lot closer than I thought it would be, Buck.
Really?
I mean, going into it. Yeah, looking at the Trafalgar poll and Susquehanna, I really thought it'd be Oz and then Barnett and then McCormick. What I think happened, and perfectly understandable, is that Barnett and Oz split the MAGA vote. Obviously, Oz had the Trump endorsement that took some of the MAGA crowd with him, and Barnett took the rest and allowed McCormick to run right up the middle. And again, for those that were watching, McCormick had an 8,000 vote lead for most of the night. And then Oz, as of this afternoon, Oz, I think, has about a 3,000 vote lead. You know, I think they're still counting some mail-in ballots. It will go to a recount. I mean, less than half a point in Pennsylvania triggers a recount. But if Oz holds to a 2,000 to 3,000 vote lead, I don't see any recount overturning that election. But a lot closer than I thought it would be. But.
Now, what do you make of all the analysis around the Trump endorsement component of this? People are trying to say his influence is still pretty dominant, but
it is.
What do you make of it?
No, it is. When you have a very clear cut, basically a two-person race, as we saw in Ohio, you know, JD was down 6 points before the endorsement, wins by 8. You start to look at some of these other Senate races. There was a poll that just came out of Missouri showing Eric Greitens in the lead by 9, but also showing that whoever Trump endorses gets about a 23-point bump. From that, we've seen the same looking at Arizona Senate primary as well. It's about a 21-point bump for whoever gets the Trump endorsement if it really narrows down to just a couple people. When it gets to a really hotly contested three-way race, it's still the difference, but you're just not going to see as significant a bump, especially when there's two MAGA candidates, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think were the key differences for the electorate in Pennsylvania? I mean, I know you're not far away there in Virginia, but what do you think were the key differentiation points specifically between McCormick and Oz?
Well, McCormick, I'll start with McCormick because I was in the category of Buck anybody but McCormick because of his very close ties and then the fact that he's made a lot of money doing direct business with the Chinese, communist Chinese. And that to me was one of the reasons. Again, Oz is no conservative rock star. And I think everybody's fully aware of that. But he's been loyal to Trump. And I think that those were some of the dynamics that came down to. McCormick had said some things January 6th about Trump. And that really resonated with Trump, not in a positive way. Oz was very helpful to Trump in 2016. So it really came down to just some bigger issues for Trump and endorsing Oz over McCormick. And then when it came down to some of these issues, it's the normal stuff and looking at immigration, inflation, all these things. But this really came down to, like, is it going to be the Trump endorsement or is it going to be McCormick? And in my mind, honestly, Buck, to be very blunt, I didn't care who won as long as it wasn't McCormick.
Well, we still don't know, right? So we're still looking to see who ends up in the victory circle here. Just wondering also, Kathy Barnett really got a lot of attention in the last few weeks and seemed to be surging. Looks like the polls maybe gave her a bigger piece of this than ended up happening. What do you make of her part in this really pivotal race?
You know, I think there were a lot of people in the base that didn't trust Oz and were looking for an alternative. They didn't like McCormick. They didn't trust Oz, looking for an alternative. Barnett crops up and there you have it. I got to tell you, Buck, I'm not really having fully formulated a theory on this, but I suspect that there's some machinations that took place end of April when Joni Ernst, of all people, endorses Barnett, which seemed to me a very weird endorsement. I got to tell you, I suspect there's something going on here with people trying to split the MAGA vote. And again, I haven't fully fleshed out this theory, but it seems very convenient that Barnett comes in, gets these endorsements, gets Club for Growth's $2 million ad buy coming down the home stretch. I think in a way to kind of split the vote and hopefully McCormick runs up the middle. I haven't fully fleshed out this theory, but there's something going on there, Buck, that strikes me as not quite straightforward as people would like it to be.
So, Ned, I got to ask you about the endorsements on the Democrat side.
I mean, Buck, Biden is the massive albatross around Democrats' necks everywhere. You're seeing Democrats in some of these upper Rust Belt states, even today in Wisconsin, a potential U.S. Senate candidate, the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, distancing herself and going after Biden over inflation. I'm going to be running away from him as fast as possible because they realize with his unpopularity, with his approval ratings so low, he's not going to be helping them at all in these midterms. I think he's going to be dragging them down. And honestly, Buck, I mean, I'm looking at these numbers, the generic polls, the inflation, all of these things, and gas prices going up, Biden continuing to tank, the stock market tanking. I'm thinking there's going to be 15 or 20 Republicans running for the House this fall that have no right to win, and they're going to somehow pull it out. And I think you're going to see states like Colorado suddenly come into play because I think things are going to continue to trend that badly for Democrats to where I think they're going to be looking at losing 3, 4, 5 Senate seats. Again, dozens upon dozens of House seats. I know some don't want to say more than 20 Republican gains. I'm thinking 30, 40, 50 or more, depending on how bad it gets. So I think you're looking at total annihilation at the federal level. Then look at the statewides as well. I mean, Biden is going to absolutely tank Democrats at the federal, state, and local election this fall, and I couldn't be happier.
Dr. Oz, by the way, thanked President Trump last night. We know the race is not yet decided officially, but here's Dr. Oz.
President Trump, after he endorsed me, continued to lean into this race in Pennsylvania. He knows all the subtleties of it. He was willing to participate with teletown halls, which he advised that I do. It was a brilliant idea. He participated in a massive rally out in Westmoreland County. And God bless you, sir, for putting so much effort into this race. I will make you proud.
How do you think Oz, let's assume it's Oz for a second, could still be McCormick, right, but assuming it's Oz, how does he stack up against the likely Democrat opposition?
Well, he's going to be competitive. I think not only Oz, but Mastriano in the gubernatorial race in a year like 2022. Pennsylvania is never an easy state to win. I think it's going to be highly competitive. I like our odds of winning both the Senate and the gubernatorial race.
I'm happy to hear you say that about Mastriano, because I got to tell you, I know a bunch of very pro-Trump people, Ned, who think that was the word disaster has been thrown around a lot.
I don't see it that way, Buck. You know, I know that a lot of people wanted to see him endorse Barletta. He went with Mastriano. I think he's actually a pretty solid candidate. In a year like 2022, if people will actually focus, not abandon the state, I think we could pull out both of those statewide.
All right, my friend, I certainly hope you're right, and you tend to be, so let's see how it shakes out. Good to see you.
Thanks, Buck.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell spooked the markets by announcing the Fed is willing to take dramatic action to prevent the rise of inflation, including raising interest rates. The First TV's Tiana Lowe stops by to give an update on America's struggling economy.
The labor market is extremely tight, and inflation is much too high. Against this backdrop, today the FOMC raised its policy interest rate by a half percentage point and anticipates that ongoing increases in the target rate for the federal funds rate will be appropriate. In addition, we are beginning the process of significantly reducing the size of our balance sheet. We are on a path to move our policy rate expeditiously to more normal levels, assuming that economic and financial conditions evolve in line with expectations.
Chairman Jerome Powell stating that the Federal Reserve will not stop raising interest rates until inflation is dealt with. Powell's recent statement spooked the market, sending stocks into a nosedive that continued today. So what are the coming days going to hold if the Fed decides it's time to raise those interest rates? Joining me now to discuss, the First TV's contributor here, Tiana Lowe. Tiana, good to see you.
Hey, Buck, good to see you even under these very weird circumstances.
Yeah, it's a rough day in the market, that's for sure. And it looks like it's only going to get rougher. What are you seeing?
Yes, so just remember, Jerome Powell is refusing to save the stock market this time because he cannot save the stock market this time. You know, Powell and the Fed board, including Lael Brainard, who was recently renominated by Joe Biden and confirmed by the Senate to be the vice chair of the Fed board, they were crucial doves, not even just, you know, in the years of the pandemic, agreeing to keep at the, you know, outlier of basically 0%, but even in March, in the first Fed board meeting of the year, while inflation, you know, you had that producer price index figure inflation catapulting up and towards the double digits, you know, that after in March, CPI came out 8.5%. And Powell and Brainard were part of the votes that voted to keep the interest rate increase at 0.25 percentage point, not a 0.5 percentage point because of, wait for it, Ukraine. It's always Ukraine, right? And so now Powell realizes that there's nothing left to do. He has to keep on raising rates. He's not going to rule out the 75 basis point increases. And now the markets are spooked. But the fact is, it's too little too late. If this had begun, you know, in 2021, if he had committed to chase that perennial white whale of the left and of the progressive financial movement of maximum employment, which, just figure this one out, it doesn't actually exist. But then at least markets would have known that they could have predicted a 0.25 percentage point rate increase every single meeting. And that way we wouldn't be looking at, you know, 75 basis points. So yeah, now investors are spooked because they realize the bubble is about to burst. This is a massive, massive, massive explosion of asset price inflation that predated COVID, but COVID made it orders of magnitude worse.
An article from USA Today reads that stocks are moving lower after Powell makes a case for aggressive rate hikes. So what is going to happen to the market if rates keep rising in this way over the long term?
So, you know, I don't know if you saw, for instance, that show called We Crashed, which was about the WeWork IPO, you know, or the Uber biodoc that they did. You had all these tech companies or companies that weren't tech companies, but managed to sort of build themselves a tech companies that were either slated to have these unicorn IPOs or came out and had sort of disappointing IPOs. The fact is that by the Fed keeping the price of borrowing near zero for a decade of sustained economic growth, it allowed banks and investors to fund a lot of junk companies. You know, I'm a little bit more bullish on Uber than other people are, but there are tons of companies in the market that should not have the valuation that they do. You look at things like a Way Travel, which is just a suitcase company that managed to rebuild itself as tech. Airbnb, which is really just an algorithm in a marketplace. All of these companies, even the ones that aren't publicly traded, have been massively overvalued. And you're going to see them take a real hit. And the only ones that are going to be left standing are the mega giants that have been able to establish some sort of monopolistic power. You're still going to have Walmart. You're still going to have Amazon. You're still going to have big oil. But a lot of these companies that have been able to, you know, skate by with these overvaluated, you know, markets, this is really going to hurt those. The one thing I can say in the long run, and this is why Powell should have been encouraging the rest of the Fed board to raise interest rates earlier back in last year, as soon as Joe Biden was taking office, that's not even to mention all of the quantitative easing that should have never happened at the beginning of pandemic, is that you would have been encouraging better saving. If you try and open up a savings account right now, best rate, I made sure to double check it, best rate you could get is 0.5 percentage point at Barclays and 0.5 percentage point at Amex. That is the best savings rate you can get for just a standard savings account. You look at CDs, you look at any private investment fund you can use if you're not categorized as an investor without purchasing property, without purchasing stocks, it is very, very, very low. In the long run, as these rate increases are sustained, it does mean that people will be able to get savings accounts with better rates, which is great because not only do you take more liquidity out of the market, which is what's really driving inflation right now, but you're also encouraging people to be more responsible with their money because they actually have an incentive to save it rather than spend it.
Same man who says he's going to keep hiking up interest rates is the guy telling us it's going to be very challenging to fight inflation, Tina. Watch this one.
A lot of people, though, are skeptical that you can get inflation down to your 2% goal without a recession. What do you know that they don't?
I don't know anything that they don't. I mean, I would say it's there's no disagreement here, really. It is going to be a challenging task, and it's been made more challenging in the last couple.
He didn't know that pumping in, you know, $3 trillion into the economy in a span of 2 months was going to create this monetary crisis with an overvaluation of everything where no one was saving money. He didn't know, you know, back in March 2021, when Larry Summers, who again is a liberal, was saying, do not pass these extra spending bills. Do not keep rates at these historic lows. I mean, hell, you even have Ben Bernanke, one of the most toxic people in the world of finance, in my opinion, because he's the one who pushed for the original regime of quantitative easing after the Great Recession of 08. Even he's admitting that the Fed sat on their hands for too long before really raising rates. And now Powell's trying to fight off the expectation that we're going to hit a recession. The fact is, when you wait this long, that's an inevitability, because it's either you know, take the immediate hit of decreasing growth, having some job loss, which quite frankly isn't going to be that big of a deal considering the crisis we have in employment anyway, versus having everyone's savings be reduced down to nothing. And that is unacceptable. We cannot have the value of the US dollar collapse. So the recession becomes an inevitability. And, you know, he's going to still try selling this, we're going to have a soft landing BS. But that's just to cover his own derriere, so to speak.
So to speak. Tina, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Buck.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is getting serious about the baby formula shortage, claiming it might be time to have some indictments. We'll get the video for you in Quick Hits up next. Elon Musk abandons Democrats, and a Twitter executive reveals what he really thinks about Twitter users. We have those stories in Quick Hits. Let's get right to it. Look, Elon Musk is the left's nightmare these days, because this is the richest man in the world, who was a former Democrat by his own admission, who really has just decided, he's seen that the Democrat Party is completely insane, and he no longer in good conscience can allow them to do the things they're doing in this country and have the domination of social media they've had. Here he is, for example, telling everybody that he's actually going to be voting for the GOP in this election for the first time ever.
And, you know, the reality is that Twitter at this point, you know, has a very far left bias. And I would class myself as a moderate, and, you know, neither Republican nor Democrat. And in fact, I have voted overwhelmingly for Democrats historically, overwhelmingly. Like, I'm not sure, I might never have voted for a Republican, just to be clear.
Right.
Now this election, I will.
This election, he will. Why? Because the Republican Party is the party of free speech now and free thought and freedom, period. The Democrats are the party of autocracy, authoritarianism, censorship, wokeness, indoctrination for your kids. Crazy what they're pushing. And we all know it. We all see it. This is from Project Veritas, by the way, continuing on with this theme about Twitter here. You know, there are people that claim, by the way, we have the disinformation czar say that, oh, it's not conservatives who are being silenced, it's liberals who are being silenced on social media, which is such a stupid comment that it's hard to imagine anybody would say it out loud with a straight face, but she did. This is from Project Veritas, their work. A Twitter executive who is mocking Elon Musk for thinking the public can make their own decisions about what should go on Twitter. Watch.
Well, right now we don't make profit, so it's going to say ideology, which is what's led us to not being profitable.
The rest of us who have been here believe in something that's good for the planet and not just to give people free speech. These are the policies we've put in place for misinformation or mislabeling media.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for him to be like, oh, because people should make their own decision. It's like, no, but people don't know how to make a rational decision if you don't put out correct things that are supposed to be out in the public.
It's amazing that these are the people that work at Twitter and they think they're smarter than you. You know? Stop for that for a second. You have these, honestly, these like women and gender studies majors from Oberlin who burrow into a place like Twitter and they work for like community health standard or something in a social media company or, you know, health, community conversation health or something. And they think they should be telling you what you can say. Amazing. Scary, honestly. Pelosi realizes the baby formula shortage thing is just a bigger concern for her than anything else, is that it's politically really damaging for Democrats on top of all the other things going on right now. Here she is talking about the possible need for an indictment. Watch.
When it comes to babies, it's the here and now and in this moment. I think that when all of this is done, I'm not associating my colleagues with what I'm going to say right now, I'm just saying it myself, I think there might be a need for indictment.
Indictment? Indict who? That's what I would want to know. Who does she think she can indict it for this? For a company not making enough baby formula? How is that going to go? And then there's this, speaking of living in an alternate universe, this is a witness for a pro-abortion group. They don't say pro-choice, they actually say pro-abortion, this group, on Capitol Hill today, saying that, yeah, men can get pregnant and have abortions. Watch.
What do you say a woman is?
I believe that everyone can identify for themselves.
Okay. Do you believe then that men can become pregnant and have abortions?
Yes.
Men can get pregnant and have abortions. Supposedly a women's rights leader there. Yeah. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country. Heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull. Major Turnbull sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber. The complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope. With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.